I want to congratulate you for taking on what is actually, I think, the most difficult challenge facing anybody on this planet today. You didn't know that when you signed up. It's just fun. We're just going to dream. Oh, great. This is one of those things where you, like, get enlightened while you fall asleep.
Yeah.
It's true. However, question is why isn't everybody doing it? It's difficult. It's simple. It's extremely simple. But there's a catch. The catch is that we are actually facing one of the most powerful thought forms on the planet today. Right this moment, half of this planet is going unconscious. And this is like a wave moving around the planet. Some people are waking up, some of them are falling asleep. And so at any one time on the planet, there's only half the planet is in consciousness. So what we're really looking at is this very, in fact, it is one of the most fundamental, most powerful, more powerful than just about any other thought form, this separation between consciousness and what's called unconsciousness. We'll be looking at that, whether or not it is actually unconsciousness, but or just a different form of consciousness. So you, collectively and individually, have volunteered yourselves to help change that thought form. And it is fun, and it's natural. It's something we're all doing every night. We're all falling asleep. So from the Taoist perspective, if there's something happening in a natural cycle, the idea is, well, just take advantage of it. Just go with it and use the energies of that event to further your evolution or further your level of balance and harmony with the cosmos. Now, there have been many, many different traditions of dream practice around the world. And I have investigated a number of these things. I first started working the dream practices back in 1982. Almost 18 years. And I first started studying with some of the Tibetan methods. The Tibetan Buddhists have a lot of dream practice methods. And later, when I was touring around Greece, of course, I discovered that the Greeks had quite a tradition of dream practice also. And in fact, there's a dream hospital, the ruins of a dream hospital there. I'm sure many of you know that drama, many forms of modern drama began in Greece, but drama was considered to be a form of therapy and was actually used after dream practice. Is this where they had this dream hospital? You would go for 3 nights and 3 days in the dark, and that was the first phase of your therapy. Was you had an illness, you had some problem, you would dream. You stay in the dark and get in touch with your dreams. And then you would come out and you would act in the outer world. So first you would go in the underworld, in effect, and meet your demons or whatever your thing was about. And then you would come out and you would express it in the outer world. The Greek healer who initiated this, Asclepius, was later...
Did you say
Asclepius. Sit up. Later, his was made into a god, a Greek god, and the Romans used his figure, his face, when they made Christianity a state religion, and that is the face of Jesus today. Okay, so the image you see of Jesus, I mean, there was not paintings of him in the Middle East, okay? The Romans who started creating these images of Jesus, and they used the image of this healer whose main practice was dream. One of his main practices was dream therapy and dream practice. There are a lot of shamanic traditions which work with dreams. dream travel. That's, from the Taoist point of view, astral travel, dream travel is actually just a kind of a side aspect of this practice. This is a spiritual practice, and it also is a very practical, has many, many practical applications in terms of managing your life. We're going to look at a whole range of modern research as well into dreams and sleep states. And mostly, though, we want to actually practice. And you, of course, might be mystified exactly how we're going to do that. But that will be unfolded as it happens. The Taoists, of course, are studying how the body functions and how consciousness functions, and had an extremely sophisticated understanding. And so, of course, something that's happening for what is a third of most people's lives, 8 hours a night, we'll say, was of great interest to them. And I have just returned from China, as many of you know. And the last 10 days of my trip, I spent much of it in one of the sacred mountains in China called Huashan, which means flower mountain. And this mountain was given to a Taoist about 1,200 years ago by the emperor. He won it in a game of Chinese chess, Go. And this practitioner who won the mountain, his main practice was dream practice. He's the one who really developed it up to a very high level. His name is Chen Tuan, C-H-E-N-T-U-A-N. And so I've just been to the seat, the high throne, we'll say, of dream practice. And I will be giving a slideshow talk tonight on my trip to China and also on Huashan, my climbing up this mountain, which is a spectacular mountain. It looks like Yosemite, only in typical Chinese fashion. They've sculpted stairs and, you know, carved Chinese writings, and, you know, they're in the side of the mountain and impossible to reach places, and put monasteries and temples all over it. He went there also, yeah. So that'll happen around nightfall, around 8:30 or 9, whatever. And it's open if you have other friends in the area and want to come by, it doesn't matter. So let's talk about the schedule for a second. Back to the question of sleep and dreams. My leash. First question is, what is the purpose of sleep? Second question is, what is the purpose of dreaming? They're not the same thing, necessarily. So, tell me, what is the purpose of sleep? Why do we need to rejuvenate? Why can't we rejuvenate while we're living? While we're awake?
We can't.
Because we don't know how to do it.
This is the question. Sleep researchers have been looking into this question, and they know if they deprive people of sleep, they go crazy. Eventually, they start hallucinating, and they basically make their conscious reality into a dream reality. That usually happens after, you know, 3 days or something. They do this in the sleep lab, and they keep waking people up, and, you know, and they have them all wired up. And they do this with animals, too, trying to see what happens. You know, the Taoists were looking at the science of the life force. Okay, we're not looking at the Taoist religions. We're not looking at all the many other applications. We're looking at just how does the life force flow? And essentially, divided into two major flows that we're aware of, the yin flow and the yang flow. Now, these have many, many meanings. The yin flow means going slow. Yang means going fast. When you're very excited, there's more yang energy. There's more activity and movement. When you're very quiet and still and sort of receptive, that means a different kind of energy is happening. And there could be more, let's say, of an inflow rather than an outflow. Might be another way to look at it. And somebody else just flowed in. So, this basic distinction of yin and yang is matched by their observations in the natural world. And this has to do with the type of qi that is flowing during the day and the type of qi that is flowing at night. At night, the yin force dominates. Called the night force, dark light. And during the day when the sun comes up, it pulls the chi from the earth. The gravitational field of the sun and its powerful, we'll say its consciousness from the Taoist point of view, pulls the chi up. It activates all the plants and animals and most of the humans who drag themselves out of bed. And it reaches its apex, and then it goes back down again. The sun appears to set. Remember, it's not actually setting. The Earth's just turning. We all knew that, right? And the chi goes back into the Earth. Now, is it really going back into the Earth, or is it the sun? Here's the Earth, and the sun's moving around it. It pulls the chi on the other side, and so the chi, the Earth's chi, is going to the other side, where daylight is on the other side of the planet. And as it pulls the chi this way, then there's a different type of force which is coming into the earth, coming in from the night sky, the moon, stars. So we get these fluctuations, this constant cycling. And this cycling between night and day and the rising and falling of the larger field of the chi in the earth is matched by various cycles in our body, which the ancients observed, since they didn't have as many things to distract them. They could watch all these things all day long and go, oh, yeah. They watched cycling between the left and right nostril, about a 90-minute cycle that changes. There are various other cycles of the body. They noticed the cycles of qi moving through the various organs, and the Chinese mapped this out very thoroughly in what they call the qi clock. 2-hour cycle where the qi is dominant in one organ and its meridian and its associated psychic functions. And there's also deeper channels in the body that shift. And that researchers might note as a left-right brain hemisphere shift. From the Taoist point of view, that is just the outer manifestation of deeper energy channels shifting. And that's kind of like from the left to the right side of the body. It's like a wave fluctuation. So the foundation of all the Chinese sciences are based on these movements, these fluctuations between yin and yang. The movement between awake and asleep is the major fluctuation between yin and yang that we experience, the most dramatic shift. You could say that all of us take this journey every night, and in a sense, you're all masters. You go through the whole phase, the whole cycle, and you come back, and you go and you come back, and you've been all making this journey for quite a long time now. The problem is that the fragments, the ego fragments of your mind that are here right now listening to me don't know exactly what happens when you're in the sleep state or the dream state. And that's what we're going to change. And we need to give you a map of how to make those changes and also what happens during those changes. Ultimately, it doesn't matter. We could give you all kinds of information, okay? And you'd still fall asleep and you wouldn't know what's going on unless you had a method and a way to train yourself to participate in that shift. And ultimately, our goal is actually to stay awake while our body falls asleep. That's a high-level practice. There are many things you can do in between that. Okay? And in 2 days, which is what we have here, it's possible some of you might have that experience, but you know, we'll just leave that as an open possibility. More likely, what we're going to be focusing on is the twilight zone, where you are semi-conscious, we'll say. And that shift, that twilight zone is the shift between what you think of as your normal awake state and your sleep states. And there are different levels of sleep states, which we'll go into as we get deeper into the subject matter. The first level of mastery is simply to start to intervene in the twilight zone. And to give, we're going to learn to give certain dream commands. We're going to learn to recognize what's in the twilight zone, the shifts that are happening, and various methods that we've evolved and the Taoists have evolved in order to intervene and have an effect. Okay, let's get back to the big question we were talking about, the purpose of sleep. What is the purpose of dreams? That's an open question. Does anybody have an answer?
I would say it's to develop some type of communication between the consciousness and the superconsciousness.
Okay. Anybody else?
Maybe another mechanism for resolving issues and experiences that maybe, you know, conflict or just experiences that you go through during your day.
Okay. Anybody else? Okay, so we have communication with the superconscious, the subconscious, and the ordinary consciousness, the awake consciousness. Okay, anybody else? Is there some other form of consciousness we didn't cover yet? Well, the unconsciousness, let's talk about that for a second. Unconsciousness. What does that mean? Does it mean consciousness? Consciousness is not actually conscious? Why would it be called consciousness then? It's a... It's not well named. Okay? We use that term. Let's see who's doing the knowing. Who's calling who unconscious? That's really what the question is here, okay? There's one part of the consciousness calling another part of the consciousness un. Okay? It's like saying, na 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 na, you're unconscious. Now, is that other part, which is consciousness, unconscious? No. Consciousness, by definition, is conscious. And we live in this illusion during the daytime. The illusion is only there during the daytime, that we are the consciousness, and that everything that's not in this yang state of active, you know, daylight consciousness is unconscious. So this is the first illusion you have to get rid of, okay? And realize that other forms of consciousness are conscious, even while we're not conscious of them. They are conscious of us, of this fragment that thinks it is conscious. Did you understand it? So Let's just make it real simple. Let's make it black and white. Okay? You know the little Tai Chi symbol, the yin yang thing? The two little fish swimming in circles or something? Yeah. So like the Greek Ouroboros, the snake swallowing his tail. Half the fish is white, half the fish is, or the other fish is black. And if that's like the dream wave moving around the planet, half the planet asleep and half of it awake. But it's really all one consciousness. And an aspect of it is what we are calling awake, and an aspect is calling asleep. But the asleep part is also active. It's just doing something different. So the first thing that we need to kind of aware of is the fact that just because we wake up, that other part of us doesn't go away, doesn't die, it's still functioning. We have just shifted our focal point. You could call it your assemblage point, a popular term, made popular by Carlos Castaneda. Your assemblage point is now in your physical body. At nighttime, your assemblage point is in your dream body, your astral body, your energy body. Use whatever language you're comfortable with. The Taoist model, we use three bodies. You have a physical body, you have an energy body, and you have a spiritual body. And then there's the Wu Qi, which is supreme unknown. We call it your void body. Out of some realm which we don't really know, but it's birthing all being. So, the big picture here, to answer my own question also, from the Taoist point of view, the function of dreaming is to communicate between the different bodies. That the conscious mind, a diagram might help here. This circle will take to be the awake mind. In the physical body, has a clear boundary. Everything seems to have a boundary on it. And this is daylight. And the mind can move around inside this thing and explore it and look around at it, whatever, and it says, okay, great, I'm awake, I know, I've mapped it, I can see it. The senses are functioning. It's one of the features of this mind, okay? The senses and the neocortex and the faculties of judgment are all functioning, and memory, okay? And memory in a one form of memory, let's just say, very prescribed linear sense. At night, the consciousness shifts beyond that boundary, okay? And plays in a different field. There are other realms beyond this, okay? And that's one of the values of dream practice, ultimately, is to go beyond the what's called the astral or just the energy body, because it's an intermediary and it can help you, because you've already made the shift naturally into the dream plane, the dream body or the astral body, you're halfway to the next body already. Okay, so you have a shift that's occurred, so if you first of all understand what happened in that shift, how that shift happened, then you can begin to navigate and go even further. Once you begin getting comfortable operating with the energy body. How does this differ from all the other Taoist practices? Good question. What's the difference between dream practice and various other forms of Qigong and Neigong, internal practices such as learning to circulate your Qi in the orbit, fusion of the five elements practices, learning to take the different elements. So I wore this t-shirt so you could be reminded of some of the things some of you already know. This is talking about the five-phase cycling of your energy. I asked myself this question also. And the answer I get is that there's really only one difference between meditation and dream practice. And that is, during dream practice, the body goes to sleep. But the function of the meditation is the same. It's to make contact with the subtle bodies, which the energy bodies and the different levels of the energy body will then connect you to the spirit body. So this is really just a form of meditation in which something is happening to your physical body that's different, slightly different, not necessarily that different. Once you begin to practice it a lot and you get deeper into it, then the boundary gets very thin. But that happens over time. You know, what it means is that the more practices you've learned and the more experience you have, a clear understanding of the map of your energy body, how it functions. It seems to be invisible, but we see all of its effects here in the physical plane. All of these cycles, all of these changes in our health, everything. So you learn the six healing sounds. You learn the inner smile. You learn the orbit. You learn the fusion of the five elements. All of those things are helping you to learn how to navigate and how to manage your chi flow and your consciousness. They work in a very direct way, more direct than, you know, analyzing it from your left brain and, you know, or scientifically trying to measure it. This is just actually going directly to it and changing it. So once you've started to do all those kinds of things, doing them in the dream state is easier because you're just working with the energy body from a different angle. Even if you have not learned those practices, you can still go, because you're dreaming anyway, you can still use this tool as your starting point. You can start off a dream practice as your beginning practice. In some ways, dream practice is considered to be a shortcut method because you're already out or halfway out of the body. Let's say in the beginning, you're halfway out. You're in the twilight zone. You're right on that boundary between the physical and the astral. You can make changes more easily and a lot faster if you can stay conscious and have the strong enough will or intention. And so whether or not you've learned the practices or whether you're just starting, the dream practice is an extremely valuable practice to know. You can use it just for, you know, improving your health, manifesting what you want in your life, or you can use it to improve your meditation, your spiritual practice. So whatever your desired outcome or goals are, that's really up to you. I'm just here to teach you the method and share with you. And then it is, as always with all the Taoist practices, it's your own unfoldment. That's your choice. There's nothing to follow except that unfoldment. Are there any questions so far? Should we just all go to sleep then? Just dive right into it? Perfect comprehension? Okay, that's your conscious mind. Now, when we get into the night side, though, there may be some questions coming up. I want to take a couple of minutes now, giving you the basic overview, and I think this is a pretty intimate process in some ways. We're all going to be lying down and sleeping together, and this is something that in society normally you only do with family. In traditional cultures, some of them like the Aborigines, they had very different practices where they would sleep curled up in a circle, the whole tribe. One person would be like the nut, and then they were all sort of spooned around in a spiral around, and, you know, there's a whole thing about collective consciousness, which is also involved with dream practice. And I know this from my own experience to be the case, because I get people telling me all the time. Well, for example, I just went to China and led a group of about 30 people. And within 2 or 3 days, and I flew there separately from the group and met them over there, I had at least 3 people come up and tell me that I had appeared in their dreams, and I was working with this or telling them this or that. Now, I never intentionally said, oh, I'm going to go to the dream plane and connect with them and tell them this or that. But I do a lot of work in that plane, consciously. I meditate a lot at night, or I do dream practice, and same thing to me, really, at this point. And so your energy field just starts interacting with all kinds of other things that you're not, your local mind is not conscious of. I first became aware of this phenomenon many years ago, even before I formally started studying dream practice, and, you know, as a practice. I used to, when I was younger, I had a lot of flying dreams. How many people here have had flying dreams? That's why you're here. Okay. I'll figure out what you're doing flying around there. Okay. I had all these flying dreams, and then I went to another level. I started a night school. I was teaching people how to fly. Yeah, a dream school. And I had all kinds of people, friends and strangers, all kinds of people would show up, and I'd be showing them how to fly. And this went on for, you know, some years. I closed the school down now, you know. Wasn't paying that well. But it was a lot of fun. And that's when I first started just spontaneously noticing that, you know, you could affect the outcome of dreams. And I was, you know, basically intervening in lucid dreams and, you know, teaching other people how to do it and move around in it. And then I discovered, oh, the Tibetans, you know, have all this stuff, the dream practice. And I started doing, you know, using the Taoist methods. I would intervene in the dreams and teach the characters in the dreams that showed up how to do certain Taoist practices, you know. For example, I used to have all these dreams about Nazis. They would come in with the machine guns and they'd be, you know, gunning everybody and going, what are you guys doing here, you know? And I don't know, why am I having this violent dream and what are all these Nazis doing in here? And then I would like to teach them some Taoist meditation practices. I'd say, like, do the orbit, you know, start to get your energy together here. You know, you guys need some fusion and get your emotional body together. So I had a hell of all these Nazis in the uniforms and machine guns, you know, doing all these practices, and they would do them. I thought, well, this is great. So, huh? Yeah. I'd like to maybe just get everybody sort of energies included in this circle here. So go around, let's just say your name, and maybe what your connection is to dreaming, whether you have a strong one or don't, or, you know, why you're here, maybe a little bit, just make it brief, but let's get a sense of the kind of dream community we have gathered together here. And I'm going to turn off the tape recorder so you can say anything that's uncensored. So, great. We can see there's a wide range here, and it doesn't matter what your agenda is, because the dream practice will help you accomplish that agenda. Even if your agenda is to sleep less so you can be more productive during the day, I'm always reminded of the story of Aristotle Onassis, the world's richest man, right? Married to Jackie Onassis, or she married to him, I guess, and took his name on. He was once asked, what is the secret, you know, of your being able to accumulate such a vast wealth? He said, well, he says, I don't sleep very much. I sleep, you know, I minimize my sleep time so that I can spend extra time, you know, I get an extra 6 hours a day to make money. Was that what the... So that's interesting, okay? So, there's a warning. If you do this practice... yeah. He had money, but he was reduced to toothpicks. I want to address this issue first. Some people say, I need 8 hours, I need 10 hours sleep, I need six, I need whatever you think you need. Let's just ask everybody to suspend temporarily, of course, this weekend, their idea about how much they need. Your current need may be based on your efficiency, on your current level of efficiency of the sleeping process, the recharging process that does occur during sleep. If you could improve your efficiency, you might not need as much sleep. That has been my experience and a traditional experience of many adepts who have worked with this. Whether or not you use that time out in the outer world or whether you use it to do other practices in the inner world is your choice again. But there is a lot of research. I see a lot of people needing to go to the bathroom. Maybe should we just take a break right now? Okay.
How long? Could we have it flat?
So as you're breathing, inhaling up in the balls of the feet, it's like the sun rising. Qi rises up, comes to the heart, up to the head, and you shift back onto your heels. It's like the sun setting. The Qi sinks back down into the earth. Let it go deep. Imagine it goes all the way to the other side of the earth. And then now shift to the balls of the feet and feel the Qi from the earth being pulled back up by the consciousness. Comes up in the body, the brain wakes up, the oxygen, energy, and then exhale, release. Body relaxes, settles down. Qi sinks in deep in the earth. Each breath is really a microcosm. The cycle of the sun and moon, night and day. Important to feel this connection with the earth in this cycle of breathing. We don't realize how powerful and how beautiful the chi, the energy of the earth is. Because it's so pervasive. Like a fish in water or a bird in air. You just take it for granted. And now we're just making, consciously appreciating and concentrating that cycle, that flow inside of our body. Using your mind, using your breath, connect to that rhythm. Dream practice is basically doing the same thing, lying down horizontally rather than standing up. Because you're lying down, there's no struggle against gravity. Right now, we have to stay conscious to maintain our balance. And that creates a different dynamic. Our head is pointed up towards the sun. Our feet is pointed towards the earth. When we lie down, it's like we're surrendering our body to the earth. And then our mind is free to move in any direction. Just be aware that the exchange between the sky and the earth flows through our body. We are like a funnel. Both the earth chi and the heaven chi start to breathe up above your head, through the whole body, from the feet through the whole body, up above the crown of the head. Maybe it goes 2, 3 feet, 6 feet above. And then shift the weight back, exhale down through the whole body. All the way down through the heels, down as deep as your consciousness comfortably can travel. Still stay connected. And breathe it back up and go above as far as you comfortably can and still stay connected, present with it.